many years ago. Before Prabhupada's, Srila Prabhupada's tapes and conversations were easily available, I heard one of 1967, where I think it was, there was a very intimate conversation with Srila Prabhupada by some of Srila Prabhupada's earliest and most senior disciples. I think the speaker to Srila Prabhupada was Yamuna Mataji in San Francisco, or perhaps her sister Janaki. And Yamuna was telling, I'll say Yamuna, Yamuna Mataji was telling Srila Prabhupada that she had a dream. And Prabhupada was on a stage and he was chanting Krishna's names, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And the kirtan was so powerful that everyone in the world was chanting along. And then, when Prabhupada at the end of the kirtan said, Jai Om Vishnupad Paramhansa Paripajakacharya, the whole world bowed down. And Prabhupada, oh, it would have been so nice to see the expression on his face when he heard this. But he sounded so pleased. And he said, thank you for dreaming like this. Now my Guru Maharaj is satisfied. So we should help Srila Prabhupada be happy and satisfy his Guru Maharaj and certainly Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu will be happy, and Giriraj too. Now, before we begin, I would like to tell a story that I think fills Giriraj Govardhan with anticipation. Because it's a story of Gokul. Last night, yesterday evening, Jagatwini Mataji spoke about the pastime of the killing of Putana. Putana was number one. Number two was Shakatasura, who was subtle. He thought that Putana had made the mistake of assuming a gross form, so he remained subtle. And he entered into the cart. And Krishna, this was at the ceremony after he just turned over for the first time, he just flicked his little legs up, little delicate legs. And the cart that he was under smashed to pieces, and the demon was killed. That was number two. Number three occurred also in Gokul. And for number three, Mother Yashoda, because these early Gokul pastimes, they were for Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, and beginning with the cowherd boys too. Their time was beginning, but mostly for Mother Yashoda and Nanda Baba, Yashoda Maya and Nanda Baba. So, Yashoda was carrying Krishna. This was her whole life. And while she was carrying Krishna, Krishna perceived that there was going to be danger soon. That's not difficult for Krishna to perceive because he's Sarvagya. But he's also Mugdata, which means his consciousness becomes compressed due to the love of his devotees. It means that he forgets his all-knowingness and his consciousness becomes full of the love, reciprocatory love, with his mother, with his father, with his friends, with the gopis. So in any case, Krishna perceived that there was danger nearby. And he has suddenly assumed an incredible weight. So much so that his mother became as heavy as a creeper carrying a great, great burden of fruits. And she had to put him down. Why did she put him down? She wasn't thinking, oh, this is too much. He's so heavy. This is too hard. No. She was simply afraid of dropping her beloved Krishna, who is as soft and tender as the most tenderest of lotuses. She put Krishna down on the ground, and then, inspired by Krishna's yoga maya, she left him there and went inside the house to perform her other duties. And that was just the chance that Trinavarta was waiting for. He was sent by Kamsa, and he came as a great, great, like, tornado, whirlwind, and he was carrying sharp grass and rocks and bricks and pieces of pots, and darkness, 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 ignorance. And everyone in Vrindavan, Gokul, became covered by this, and they began running. Mother Yasoda, after a moment of being inside, realized that Krishna was not in her arms, and she ran outside. But before she could pick up Krishna, Trinavarta had carried him upwards, this tender boy. Srila Kavi Kanapur describes how with the wind, ascending wind of Trinavarta that was so powerful, the fragrance of Krishna's body was carried upward to the heavenly planets. And Krishna himself wanted to give his own darshan to the ladies of the heavenly planets. So he climbed upward on Trinavarta. And just as a young child, because Krishna was less than a year old at this time, he enjoys, you take a young child and you throw him in the air. And what does the young child do? Who said cries? One of the brahmacharis, probably. Better you not know. The child always, invariably laughs. And so happy to get thrown high in the air. Krishna wanted some of that kind of pleasure. His scent went upward, and he climbed upward on Trinavarta. And he held Trinavarta around the neck, and he gave the heavenly damsels his darshan, the darshan of his most beautiful and charming form. And Krishna's form is the essence of charming. It is an ocean of beauty. And then Krishna's hand, which is as tender as Maharaj was describing yesterday, it is so tender, but the tips of his fingers later on become a little bit hard from playing the flute, but it is so tender. But yet Krishna's hand can become as hard as the shell of a tortoise. And with that hard hand, he hit Trinavarta. And Trinavarta became hit again by Krishna, and he crashed to the ground, dead. Now, Krishna was playing nearby, and he appeared like a sapphire locket, because Krishna is the color of sapphire, effulgent, effulgent upon the blackish body of Trinavarta. He was an effulgent sapphire jewel locket. And Mother Yashoda had come outside by this time. And her grief was inestimable because Krishna was not there where she left her. She began to lament. Oh no, I have put him down and he's gone. The jewel of my life, the treasure of my life is gone. She began to cry. She fainted to the ground, unconscious. She did not know that Krishna had already killed the demon Trinavarta. Then, some of the ladies in the village ran to where Trinavarta had fallen. And it was so close to where Putana had fallen. And interestingly enough, Putana, when he assumed her huge form, she crushed not one house. It was huge, but her form didn't crush or disturb one house in Gokul, but all of the orchards, the fruit-giving trees of Kamsa, were destroyed. And Trinavarta fell just in that area as well. And Mother Yashoda was unconscious. And the ladies rushed out, and they grabbed Krishna, and they brought her to Mother Yashoda, and they placed her upon her lap and brought her to consciousness. But she was only in half consciousness, and all she could say was, "Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna?" This was actually the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he returned after taking initiation. After initiation, the only words he would say were, "Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna Chandra? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna Chandra?" He became mad in that way. And Gadadhar Pandit was with him, his dear friend. And he asked, Mahaprabhu asked Gadadhar Pandit, "Where is Krishna?" And Gadadhar Pandit said, "Oh, Nimai Pandit, become calm. Krishna is in your heart." And Mahaprabhu immediately began ripping at his own chest. "Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna?" Mother Yashoda, "Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna?" And the ladies began telling her that Krishna was on her lap. And she began to say, the ladies treated her with the greatest compassion. She began to say, "Oh Krishna, I am the one who left you outside. I am the one who left you unprotected. This shows that my heart is so hard. It is dry like wood. Therefore, I am qualified as your mother in name only. Still, I am your mother and you show me so much affection. And you have escaped from this demon just because of your innocence. Somehow or another, you are always protected. But I should be punished for my great mistake of putting you down. I will never again put you down. I will never again let you come from my lap. I will always keep you with me. Always, always." This was the mood of Mother Yashoda. And during these pastimes in Gokul, Giriraj, Govardhan, the Yamuna, this part of the Yamuna River over here, the trees of Vrindavan, they were all waiting for their turn to assist in Krishna's pastimes. And their turn would come quite soon. But now back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and this pastime. And there's a specific reason why I told that story first, and Krishna willing, it will come out as we speak. So I will ask you that most difficult of any question. Now, does anyone remember what we were speaking about? Because everyone's consciousness is filled with so much Krishna Katha from so many different sides, and all the points are amazingly connected. But does anyone remember what we were speaking about yesterday? Yes. Yes. His journey. Desire. Thank you very much. Intense desire to have one darshan only of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whom he has heard of from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He has heard that he is the Mahakripa Maya Parameshwara, the full of compassion, supreme controller, supreme lord. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, it's going to be very difficult for me to arrange for you to see him. Because you are a king. A king means power. It means controller. It means dealing with the material energy. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it means enjoyment. The spirit of a king has to have a spirit of enjoyment to protect. Powerful. So much Purushabhav. So much of the mood of the enjoyer, the protector. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, very unlikely he'll see you. He is very strict. He is very strict. But anyway, I'll ask him. But now he is not here in Puri. He has gone to South India. But as soon as he comes back, I will ask him. So, the pastime continued, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya will soon ask the king. But Mahaprabhu actually returns to Puri. He comes back, and all the devotees are unlimitedly enthusiastic to see him. Because they have heard from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He only stayed in Jagannath Puri for a short time. But they had heard. Rukmini Devi fell in love with Krishna just by hearing about him. Narada Muni says one time he spoke to Rukmini about Krishna. And just from that one conversation, love for Krishna took birth. This is the potent speaker interacting with the receptive hearer. One conversation, lava matra. One moment is what it takes. So those devotees were so eager to hear Mahaprabhu, to see him. And I recently saw something that gave me a glimpse of what their eagerness must have been like, something like this at least, is that recently I saw an old video of Srila Prabhupada being carried up the hill in New Vrindavan. And this was, I think, 1972, and it was during the Bhagavad Dharma. There was a Vyasa Puja. It was Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja. And if I'm not mistaken, there were also Bhagavad Dharma discourses that Prabhupada gave at that time. And Prabhupada was carried up in a simple palanquin. And there's this old-fashioned handheld video of someone trying to capture this. Someone with great vision, allowing us to have vision, trying to capture this event. And with its jumping around and moving and trying to push people out of the way to get a shot of Prabhupada, I was so surprised, because it's been more than 30 years since we have seen Prabhupada physically and experienced the excitement, the incredible anticipation an excitement that occurred whenever Prabhupada went to a place. The devotees, practically speaking, went mad. And this is what I saw in this little video, that Prabhupada comes up, and you don't see Prabhupada first. All you see is it was filled only with young, Prabhupada would say, my dear boys and girls, and they really were just boys and girls. When I started chanting, I was 21, and I was one of the oldest devotees in the movement. I mean, not the oldest, but... And the boys and girls were just... They was, their faces were electric with happiness. And their hands were raised in the air just and dancing and dancing and chanting and chanting and jumping and jumping. And it was fully spontaneous, sparked by the presence of Prabhupada. Such eagerness. He had touched everyone's heart so completely. It was astounding. And the proof for me was seeing this again. So when Mahaprabhu, so it is possible, Mahaprabhu, because we have seen it, and you can all see it too, there is video evidence of it. And when Prabhupada would speak, there would be so many devotees would have the experience of directly feeling that Prabhupada was speaking to them specifically. It would touch their hearts so completely, Prabhupada's words. Everyone. So whose ever mobile phone is going off, either change your ringtone to something more transcendental. Tirtharaj Prabhu can give you one of a cow, just going, that one's acceptable. So the devotees in Puri were madly waiting, anticipating Prabhupada's arrival. Oops. The arrival of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were anxious, and the devotees had seen him, some of them, but they hadn't really dealt with him. And the king had given the quarters of Kashi Mishra, or had suggested that Kashi Mishra, which is right now the Gambira in Puri, that would be suitable because it was secluded, and Kashi Mishra was overjoyed. And as soon as Mahaprabhu came, he showed Kashi Mishra his six-armed form as Lord Ramachandra, as Lord Krishna, and as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the same form he had already showed to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So Mahaprabhu came, and everyone was so enthusiastic, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya introduced everyone to him. And then, one by one, this is the 10th chapter, one by one, exalted devotees from all over Gaudadesh began to come. First, the Puri devotees were introduced, beginning with Ramananda Roy's family, Bhavananda Roy, and Ramananda Roy's brothers. And then, Swarup Damodar arrived, then Govinda, Mahaprabhu's personal servant, arrived, and then Kashishvara arrived, and Brahmananda Bharati and Paramananda Puri arrived, and Nityananda Prabhu had sent Kalakrishna Das to Bengal to tell the devotees of Bengal that they hadn't seen Mahaprabhu in 2 years. They were so intimately connected with him in love. And they hadn't seen him in 2 years, and they were coming. And their arrival is very much the subject of chapter 11. But before they arrive, the second installment of the pastime of Mahaprabhu's dealing with King Prataparudra begins. That begins in chapter 11. Now, so far, the seed has been planted by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that Mahaprabhu is truly worthy of being seen, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all-merciful. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has seen Mahaprabhu. He's come. And now, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is in the presence of Mahaprabhu. And he's going to speak to him about the king's request. Now, fasten your seatbelts for this one. The next day, the day after Mahaprabhu's arrival, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya requested Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to give him permission to submit a statement without fear. The Bengali words, he says, abhayadan. Give me the charity of fearlessness. So that means that he was already somewhat hesitant and fearful to place before Mahaprabhu the proposal of the king, because he didn't want Mahaprabhu to become angry at him. No, one doesn't want these great personalities to become angry at them. We have had experience of great personalities becoming angry at us, and it is not fun at all. The Lord gave the Bhattacharya assurance that he could speak without fear, but he added that if your statement is suitable, I'll accept it, but if it isn't, I will reject it. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, there is a king, and his name is Prataparudra Rai, and he's very anxious to meet you, and he wants your permission, he wants to have your darshan. And as soon as Mahaprabhu heard this proposal, he immediately covered his ears with his hands. Oh, my dear Sarvabhauma, why are you requesting such an undesirable thing from me? I'm trying to renounce the world. I'm trying to give up the world. What entangles one in this world is material desires. And what Prabhupada once told two of his earliest sannyasis, when he awarded them sannyas, he said, when you go to a householder's house for preaching, don't think, oh, I could have had this. I could have had a nice family instead of this lonely life. He said, don't think like this. I could have had a house that would have been comfortable. Don't think like this, he said. But when one associates with a king who has all opulence, power, opulence, power, shakti means ability to do things. Therefore, the demonic mentality is characterized by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, Ishwaraham. Because before you could become aham bogi, before you can enjoy, you have to control Ishwara. You have to be a controller. You have to have your shakti. And the king is powerful. Since I am in the renounced order, he said, it is dangerous for me to meet a king as to meet a woman. They are both like drinking poison. So it's not only Prabhupada who made politically incorrect statements. Mahaprabhu also has done this. But there's a very deep understanding of this. And then Mahaprabhu began to lament. The Lord informed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Very important instructions. Alas, for a person who is seriously desiring to cross the ocean of material existence, to engage in the loving service of the Lord without material motives, seeing a materialist who's engaged in sense gratification and seeing a woman who is similarly interested in sense gratification is worse than drinking poison. I'll read just a little of Prabhupada's purport here. Spiritual advancement means stopping material activities and entering into spiritual activities. And the tendency of the materialistic mind with its sankalpa vikalpa, I want, I don't want, it can jump from I don't want to I want like that. I'm firmly fixed. I want to serve only. I don't want anything of this material world. And then, boom, some thought comes in the mind, some object of sense gratification comes in the mind, and the mind flips immediately. This is the power of Maya. Or, to put it in another way, which is the real point, and this is, the real point, and Prabhupada once said this, it is not that Maya is strong, it is that you are weak. What does it mean that we are weak, that I am weak? It means my fixed determination is not truly fixed at all. Yes, I want to be a devotee. Yes, I'll pray to Giriraj. But yes, I also want this, and I want that, and want this, and want that. And this, and that. And maybe when I don't see these things, they're out of mind, out of sight, out of mind. But as soon as they come right before my eyes, my material desires flame up. So Mahaprabhu is teaching great care in spiritual life. Now we'll speak more about this and make the balance proper. But yet this side must be spoken strongly. We cannot make advancement. We cannot have the fire of our devotional service burst into flame and at the same time pour water on that same fire. It will smolder. It may become extinguished. And it... Hare Krishna. Savabhoma Bhattacharya replied to this. My dear Lord, what you have said, and by the way, that verse that Mahaprabhu quoted about seeing a materialist engaged in sense gratification and seeing a woman who is similarly interested is more abominable than drinking poison willingly. It's Niskinchanasya Bhagavad Bhajon Mukhasya. It's a very famous verse that is spoken from the Chaitanya Chandradayanatak by someone, Kavi Kanapur, who has personally, as a young child, sucked on the toe of Mahaprabhu. So this verse is very important. But Savabhoma Bhattacharya replied, my dear Lord, what you have said is correct. But this king is not an ordinary king. He is a great devotee. He is a great servant of Lord Jagannath. But Mahaprabhu's mood at this point is strict. He says, although it is correct that the king is a great devotee, he is still to be considered like a venomous snake. Similarly, even though a woman may be made of wood, one can become agitated simply by touching that form. A poisonous snake, even if it is covered with jewels, is still a poisonous snake. Dangerous. Beware. Beware of that which evokes within the heart of the aspiring devotee. Beware of that which evokes the enjoying spirit. If we are serious in our attempt to go to Braja, Mahaprabhu continues, just as one is immediately frightened upon seeing a live serpent, or even the form of a serpent, there's an automatic reaction in the consciousness like this. One endeavoring for self-realization should similarly fear materialistic persons in a woman.
This is Mahaprabhu's words. Indeed, he should not even glance at their bodily features. But the Charja, if you continue to speak like this, you will never see me here again. Therefore, you should never let such a request come from your mouth.
He asked them to sing, see if Maharaj Pratibharuja could have his darshan.
Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is afraid. He returned home and he began to meditate on this matter.
Why is such stricture being given here so strongly by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Is this a condemnation of kings? Of women? And the answer is no. Prabhupada says in the purport here, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra engages the mind at the lotus feet of Krishna constantly. Thus the mind's enemies do not have a chance to strike. Following Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's example in these verses, we should be very careful in dealing with the mind. We should not be indulged. We should not give in to the mind in any circumstances. Once we indulge the mind, it can create havoc in this life, even though we may be spiritually advanced. The mind is specifically agitated through the association of materialistic men and women. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through his personal behavior, warns everyone to avoid meeting a materialistic person or a woman. Because the land of Braja is very special. Mother Yashoda, holding her dear, darling Krishna, had nothing in her mind except for him and his pleasure. This is Braja. The friends of Krishna have nothing in their minds but Krishna. Who can imagine their consciousness and the consciousness of the Braja Gopikas that the blinking of their eye, namesha, the blinking of their eye causes them anxiety. Deep feelings of separation. The blinking of their eye, we don't even notice. Our eyes blink continuously and we don't even notice it. And the blinking of their eyes caused them to criticize Lord Brahma as a prosaic, foolish, materialistic, unartful creator for making the eyes blink and therefore blocking their eyes from seeing Krishna. Kshanvantam phalamidam na param vidama. There's nothing more wonderful, they were thinking, than seeing this form of Krishna. Complete focus of the consciousness. Love, Bhishma Dev says, means retracting one's consciousness and placing it fully on the beloved, fully on the beloved, with great love and affection, only. And if we want to be there, our consciousness has to become attuned to that consciousness. That is the best word I have found for what we need to do. There's something, we don't have it, all the pieces right here, but there's something called when you're tuning your musical instrument and you don't have a perfect ear yet, you hit the tuning fork, and when you hit the tuning fork and it makes, it vibrates, then the string on a nearby instrument, if it is tuned in the same way, it will vibrate also. Our consciousness has to become attuned to the consciousness of Braja, which is so pure. Narottama Das Thakur compares it to gold being purified in 1,000 flames, purified again, and the impurities brought to the surface, brought to our attention, and then scraped off, and then the gold solidifies, and it's melted again, and less gross, more slight impurities come to the surface, and they are removed, and then it is solidified and melted again, and again, and again, and again, and again, until it has the golden, pure, molten heart like the residents of Vrindavan. It is not a cheap thing. It is a thing that means that we have to be 100% sincere. And that sincerity is everything. And Krishna reciprocates with that. So what we're talking about here really is the path to complete sincerity. And I have experienced this many, 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 many times, that I'm praying and praying and praying. And as my mother used to say to me, talking to you is like talking to the wall. I feel that Krishna's not hearing. But really, there is a lack of sincerity. And soon as there is soon as the prayer hits the point of really meaning it, of real sincerity, or you don't have to say real sincerity, sincerity means real sincerity. Soon as the point comes when our desire is sincere, immediate reciprocation. So this is the point, and if we keep focused, then the result comes quickly. And if we become dissipated, the result will take the time that it takes us to become focused. Three verses in the Bhagavad Gita. One, and all three are very famous. Vyavyas, if you know it, please say it along with me. Vyavyasakmika buddhi ekiha kuru nandana bahushaka tvanantascha buddhiyo avyasayinam. That the intelligence, and this verse was especially important for Srila Prabhupada because and his consciousness focused on the order of his Guru Maharaj to preach in the West when he read the purport of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this verse. But here is the verse. Those who are on this path are resolute, fixed in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is Bahushaka, many branched. Second verse. Bogai Shwarya Prashaktanam Taya Priti to Chaitasam Vyavya Satmika Buddhi Samadhana Vidyate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, and it is really a bewilderment. It is nothing but a bewilderment because the sense objects, they cannot make us happy as they combine with the senses because we are souls, we are spiritual. Advantavanta Kanteya Nateshu Ramate Buddha. The Buddha, the wise person, does not take pleasure in these things because they have a beginning and an end. So when will I learn this lesson? How much experience do I have to have before I focus on what is truly important to me? So as long as my mind is attracted to so many other things, the resolute determination for devotional service will not take place. And this verse, also very famous, really tells the essence of the process to do it. And it is Vishya Vinivartante Nirharasya Dehina Rasovajam Rasopyasa Param Visvanavartate. The embodied soul may be restricted because now, after hearing all this, or not even hearing it, after being the one who has to say all this, yes, I am very, very, very determined. And I'm going to be very, very determined. I'm going to be very, very determined. I'm going to be very, very determined. But I will restrict myself. But the mind is far more powerful than my weak restrictions. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects may be remain. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. That higher taste is required. No amount of self-imposed just willpower can do it. We need the mercy of Krishna to come through higher taste. And this is why we are here. In the association of devotees, in the association of the dust of Braja, in the association of Giriraj Govardhan, in the association of the holy names, Krishna Katha, the deities, then that taste can grab our heart, so we become convinced and reconvinced and reconvinced, like that story. Like, Trini, do you remember that when Gauri was leaving this world? I'll repeat what you told me as best I remember it. There was one very expert and dedicated book distributor named Gauri Dasi, who became ill with cancer. And she came to Vrindavan to leave this world, and she got a little bit better, and then she went back and did a Christmas marathon where she distributed so many books, and that was the last one, and she came back to Vrindavan to leave. And Lagtrini Mataji was taking care of her sometimes. And one day, very, very close to the end, she said, "No, it's not worth it." Is that right? There was one thing that she remembered that she was still attached to in the material world. There was something, near the Los Angeles temple, there was a devotee restaurant called Govinda's. And she was attached to the avocado spread on the tongue had still this attachment, even though she had no capacity to eat anything anymore. Because these things sit in the mind, in the consciousness, these sanskars. And oh, we have to suffer for the sanskars that we've gathered in youth. Oh, they plague us, especially in old age. They plague us. They live there. They flourish in the vata ridden mind of the old man. So she had this attachment, and then she said, "It's not worth it." And if that's the only thing that's attractive, that's left for me in the material world, it's just not worth it to come back for that. Is it worth it? Is it worth it? What is worth it? But the mind is such, once it holds on to anything, it will convince us that that thing is worth it. So be careful, is what Mahaprabhu is teaching us. Be careful of what? This rascal mind. And he said it so strongly to teach us this point. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was frightened. our consciousness to get into Braja, our consciousness must be attuned to the Brijbasi's consciousness. Now I want to go.
I was thinking of the video. You know, you were talking. You mentioned about that video of happiness at 26 Second Avenue, where one of the devotees, just you know, a few weeks in the movement, you know, I want to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. I want to spread. This is wonderful. How long have you been chanting? 2 days. And then this one devotee, and one of the devotees is like this. He's lying down. He's like this. And the interviewer is talking to him, and he's saying, "Yeah, we're all gopis. We're all gopis. We're going to go to Krishna. We're all gopis."
But the consciousness has to become attuned to the consciousness of the Brijbasis. It has to be so finely tuned that one has no other thought and no other consideration of what is favorable and unfavorable other than the greatest love of Krishna. Yate sujata pararam bruham stanesh. The gopis, when Krishna has caused them the utmost misery by leaving them at the time of the rasa dance, they're about to die. They go mad and they're thinking, "Oh, Krishna, if your tender feet touch a sprout of grass, it's going to be so disturbing. A small rock. Oh, Krishna, this causes us the greatest anxiety. It's all about Krishna. And this is impossible, not difficult, but impossible for a conditioned soul to really get the feeling for." I say feeling as opposed to understanding very consciously that in Goloka Vrindavan, it's all about Krishna, not about me. And I can't go and take my false ego with me. And the false ego is telling me it's all about me. I'm the center. And therefore, Mahaprabhu teaches that Trinadapi Sunichena, Tororapi Sunichena. And he's going to make this king humble. He's going to make him mad. He's going to make this king who wants to see him see that his kingdom is useless, insignificant, without the mercy of Mahakripamaya, Mahaprabhu. He's going to place reality. He's going to teach us and make, with the king, he's going to place reality in its proper perspective. The reality is that the lifetime of Lord Brahma, the reality is, even before we get to that level, in 100 years from now, how many of us will still be here in this world, in this body? In 100 years from now, how many of us? We have big problems, have this big problem, it's plaguing my mind. And the life of Lord Brahma is compared to a flash of lightning over the ocean, the lifetime of Lord Brahma, which is thousands and millions of years. And in 100 years, in 150 years, no one will even know that I ever existed. And here I am thinking myself the center, and this is so important, and I need this. It's such an affront to the false ego of a conditioned soul that 150 years from now, at most probably, no one will even know that I ever existed. Oh. The false ego doesn't like that medicine. the resonance of Vrindavan. You know, there's a famous little story. This is one of the first little stories that Prabhupada told us, the stories of the gopis and how Krishna had a headache. Raise your hand if you don't know the story of the Krishna had the headache. Oh, you don't know the story. Okay. Narada Muni asked Krishna, why the gopis are the greatest devotees? Why? And Krishna said, you go to my other devotees and tell them that I have a headache, and the only thing that will cure my headache is the dust of the feet of my devotees, and my headache will go away. Go to my devotees, and then you will understand the answer to your question. Experiential learning. So went to the great devotee brahmanas. Krishna has a headache. Oh no, Krishna has a headache. Should we say mantras? What should we do? He says that the only thing that will cure him is the dust from your feet. The dust of his... We can't do that. We'll go to hell. What an offense. He's the Lord. We are his servants. Okay. Next devotee. We can't do that. We can't do that. Why? He's the Lord. We are his servants. We're taught the greatest offense is to... That's one of the things when you first come to India, you learn when you walk through a crowd. You walk like this. So you don't touch anyone with your feet. But finally, when he went to the gopis, they immediately said, "Take the... But aren't you afraid of going to hell?" We don't care. We're ready for that. So when we hear this story, we think, oh, how wonderful. The great gopis are ready to go to hell for millions of years to get rid of the Krishna's headache. How wonderful. But the weather is terrible in hell, let me tell you. It's terrible. And there's pain continuously. The romance of going to hell and doing anything for Krishna's pleasure is short-lived because it doesn't live in the mind, it lives in bhakti, in the heart of the devotee. It's not artificially done, it's not just a sentiment, it's not romantic. We have to develop our bhakti, we have to follow the process. We have to fall in love with Krishna. It is love. Mother Yashoda is willing to die 1,000 deaths to save Krishna the inconvenience of a drop of perspiration that may cause him inconvenience. It is love. We want to go to Vrindavan. We have to attune our consciousness to the residents of Vrindavan. Otherwise, it's like a contemporary example, whose only experience of music is going to heavy metal rock concerts and rap music. And he's really into rap music. And then he goes to hear Mozart and Bach and Beethoven. Just doesn't work. He says, what do you do when you're here? What are you supposed to do when you're listening to this symphony concerto? What do you do? Our consciousness has to become fine. Fine. And the gross and the fine do not mix together. Matter and spirit do not mix together. We follow the process. So Mahaprabhu is making these strong points. So we know this. But he also moves on. Here's chapter 3 in the story of Maharaj Pratyapuruja's moving forward. So Maharaj Pratyapuruja doesn't know what Mahaprabhu... Just imagine what it would be like. We'll hear what it happens. But you have this burning desire to see the Supreme Lord, and he's right there, and you ask someone so dear to him, can I see him? And he says, It's seeing him would be like taking poison.
Just imagine talking about feeling bad about yourself.
At this time, this is chapter 3, we just heard chapter 2. At this time, Maharaj Pratapuruja arrived in Jagannath Puri, Purushottam, and accompanied by his secretaries, his ministers, his military officers, because that's what kings do. They're powerful. They don't go alone. King means power. He immediately, being a devotee, went to visit the temple of Lord Jagannath. When King Prataparudra returned to Jagannath Puri, Ramananda Roy also came with him, because Mahaprabhu had told Ramananda Roy in chapter 8, please come. From the Godavari, he met him. Please come. You must come to Puri. Our hearts are completely attuned to each other, because Ramananda Roy is Vishakadevi. Our hearts, Mahaprabhu called for Ramananda Roy. He didn't have to request, may I come. The attunement was there. The affinity of hearts was there, of consciousness. So the king went to see Lord Jagannath, and Ramananda Roy immediately went to meet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. With great happiness, ecstasy, Ramananda Roy offered his obeisances. The Lord embraced him, and both of them began to cry. In great ecstasy of love, it was the meeting of hearts, of consciousness and attunement, of love for Krishna. Vrindavan was meeting Vrindavan. The gopis were meeting the gopis. They began to cry ecstatically. And Ramananda Roy, practically speaking, was a king. Consider that, my dear devotees. He was the governor of the province. He was a king. A void, unattunement. But when there is attunement of consciousness, what is the difficulty? And seeing this dealing between Ramananda Roy and Mahaprabhu, because Mahaprabhu, everyone knew, was a strict sannyasi. Seeing a king is like seeing a serpent. Fear comes in the heart. And seeing Mahaprabhu's dealings with Ramananda Roy, his intimate associates who were nearby, they were astonished. Who is this person? Ramananda Roy began speaking about his situation. I inform King Prataparudra of your order for me to retire from government service. By your grace, the king was pleased to relieve me of these material activities. I said, Your Majesty, I am now unwilling to engage in political activities. I desire only to stay at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Kindly give me permission. And when I submitted this proposal, the king, immediately upon hearing your name, he arose from his throne. He embraced me. My dear Lord, as soon as the king heard your holy name, he was immediately overwhelmed by great ecstasy. And catching my hand, he displayed all the symptoms of love. As soon as he heard my petition, my request, he immediately granted me pension without reduction. Yes, you can stop all your work for the government. And your pay, your maintenance stays the same. Thus the king granted me a full salary as a pension, and requested me to engage without anxiety in the service of your lotus feet. And then Mahaprataparudra said, Amito char yogya nahi tanra darshane tanre ye baje tanra safal jivane.
Safal, the purpose of my life cannot be fulfilled because I am most fallen and abominable char. This is what Haridas Thakur calls himself. I am char. I am the lowest, the most abominable. And I am unfit to receive the darshan of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And one's life is successful if one engages in his service.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the king said, is Krishna himself. The son of Maharaj Nanda. He is very merciful. And I am hopeful that in a future birth, he will allow me his darshan.
My lord, when the king said this, I understood that I don't have a fraction of the king's loving ecstasy for you. And then Mahaprabhu said, my dear Ramananda Roy, you are the foremost of all the devotees of Krishna. And therefore, whoever loves you is the most fortunate person. It is a matter of love. It is a matter of bhakti. It must come to that point within us that we make our offerings of service out of bhakti, for your pleasure, my dear Lord. Krishna has no appetite to accept our patram pushpam phalam. But when it is offered with devotion, even a leaf, a little water, some fruit becomes attractive to him. And he can't get enough of it when his devotee, Asnami Paratatmana, when his devotee makes these offerings with love, Krishna can't get enough of it. His appetite increases unlimitedly. He wouldn't eat Duryodhana's wonderfully prepared feast to try to entice Krishna onto his side. But he was eating the banana peels of Vidura's wife because she was a devotee. Krishna is hungry for devotees. Not for devotees, excuse me. He doesn't eat his devotees. He eats the non-devotees in Kalosmin Loka Chaya Krit, in a form of time. And then Mahaprabhu says what's going to happen. Because the king has shown so much love for you, Lord Krishna will certainly accept. There is no doubt. Because, and then he quotes, because, and just look how he's always acting, and we'll see this again and again and again in the mentality of Maharaj Parudra, that he's serving continuously. We mentioned this point yesterday. He's serving as a king when asked to do service as a king, but he's also sweeping the road in front of Lord Jagannath. And when some faraway South Indian king refused to accept his daughter in marriage because I'm not going to accept a sweeper's daughter. Mm-hmm. Maharaj Prataparudra came and fought with him and smashed him, and Krishna and Balaram helped him. He wasn't a sweeper, he was the Lord's sweeper, Lord Jagannath's sweeper. He was serving and serving humbly. He was a king. And these mentalities are hard to mix sometimes. Not sometimes. I saw with Prabhupada, there's this a long pastime that I won't tell because it's too long. It's so wonderful. And to tell it in brief isn't even fun. But when in Kobe, Prabhupada was so, he was sitting on an asan. He started a kirtan in the middle of
of the lecture of a Mayavad sannyasi in the presence of about 200 members of the Indian congregation there. And these things, you know, shanti, shanti, shanti is what a sadhu means. He just didn't care. He started a kirtan. And then when we went back to his room after, he was so peaceful and so self-satisfied and so internal and sweet. And he said, I am like a lion when I'm out and like a lamb at home. When the need to be a lion is there, he was a lion, ferocious, and otherwise a lamb. He once said, and I have him, and I think it was in Geneva in Switzerland. I've heard it on the tape. I heard about it, and then I was listening to Prabhupada's morning walks, and I heard this. And it shocked me, and I haven't been able to find it again. But he was saying, one of the disciples, young disciples in our cheery, saying, Prabhupada, I heard that you said you liked the early days. The early days were so wonderful in the movement. And then Prabhupada very softly and gravely said, yes, I didn't have to criticize anyone then. A Vaishnava is a lamb. But when required, he's a lion. And Maharaj Pataparudra, at this point will come up, I think, tomorrow. He was a lion of a king. He was a lion of a king, too. But we're going to see that Mahaprabhu makes him into a devotee lamb when he's not in his, when he's not doing service to Lord Jagannath as the lion king. He's the most humble of all Vaishnavas. But to go back and forth between, sometimes we get our roles confused and we become lions when we're with the devotees and then when we're outside we become lambs with the non-devotees. And then Mahaprabhu gives five quotations to prove this point from Shastra. It's not just his sentiment. It's not just his mood. That if someone becomes a devotee of the Lord's devotee, then the Lord is pleased. Then Krishna is pleased. Then how else to please the Lord? He has everything. Five Shastra quotations, one after the other, to prove the point, because the king has shown so much love for you that Lord Krishna will certainly accept him because you're so dear to Krishna. And the proof was that Mahaprabhu. First quote from Adi Purana. Krishna tells Arjuna, those who are my direct devotees are actually not my devotees, but those who are the devotees of my servants, they are factually my devotees. My devotees take great care and respect. This is from the 11th canto here, this one. My devotees take great care and respect in rendering me service. Krishna again speaking to Uddhava. They offer obeisances to me with their bodily limbs. They worship my devotees. Mad bhakta puja. They worship my devotees. So heavy, if you're a conditioned soul. That's the last person you want. You worship God, okay. A hill, okay. But devotees, respect and worship and care for the devotees. Conditioned souls don't like this kind of medicine when it hits the ground, when it's what we must do practically. Next quote, and this one was taught to me by His Holiness Purnachand Goswami. Aradhananam Savesham Vishnu Aradhanam Param Tasmat Paratamat Devi Tadiyanam Samachira. The Tadiya. Tadiya means that which is connected with the Lord. Better than worship of Vishnu is the best. Aradhananam Savesham, of all worship, Vishnu is the best. But better than the best is to deal with Tadiya. To worship Tadiya, that which is connected with the Lord. Tadiya means if you take an iron rod and put it in the fire, it loses its property of iron and it becomes like fire. This is the secret also of why when Mother Yasoda at the, it is the seed secret of Damodar Leela. When Mother Yasoda was carrying Krishna, was feeding Krishna, Krishna was crying. Because he was hungry for the affection. And this is also why cow's milk is so nourishing, because the cow gives the milk for its calf. And when the calf is present, the cow drops the milk out of the cow's affection for the calf. Giving milk to feed the calf, it's affection. And when we, by Krishna's arrangement, the cow gives so much more milk than the calf could drink. And when we get that extra milk, we're drinking the affection, the love of the cow, and it is nourishing on every level for a human being. And we don't talk about the modern, better way that the materialistic, so-called civilized rascals have much better way to get cow milk. We won't even talk about that. But always, that's the materialist, what it means to me. We have a better way to do everything. We have a better way to do everything than God's way. We have a better way. We'll show you how we wreck the weather, how we pollute everyone's mind with the sound waves of everything going on. We have a better way to do everything, and we'll destroy. This is Kali working. We'll destroy everyone, everyone's consciousness, so that it becomes such a struggle. We'll make all the authorities corrupt so that no one can trust authority anymore. So it's so hard to even trust God that he'll take care of me. This is Kali's work, and one of his main agents is the scientists, the atheistic scientists. So, Tadiya, to worship Tadiya, the worship of Vishnu is topmost. However, the worship of Lord Vishnu is rendering the service to Vaishnavas who are related to Vishnu, to serve the Vaishnavas. That's Prabhupada's translation there. Another one. Those whose austerity is meager, very slight, can hardly obtain the service of the pure devotees progressing on the path back to the kingdom of Godhead. The Vaikuntha. Very, very interesting. And Prabhupada in his purport to this verse from the third canto, very short purport, but it's so interesting. Pure devotees engage 100% in glorifying the Supreme Lord. Excuse me. Pure devotees engage 100% in glorifying the Supreme Lord, who is the Lord of the demigods and the controller of all living entities. I found this so fascinating because there's such a tendency to think, yes, I want to serve the devotees. It's not that I'm against serving the devotees, but I want to only serve the uttama, 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 uttama. But here, the pure devotees who are engaged fully but are progressing on the path to the kingdom of God. And Prabhupada in his purport says the same thing. The verse is taken from Prabhupada's translation in the third canto. And he says in his purport, the path of liberation, as recommended by all authorities, is to serve the Mahatma transcendentalists. As far as the Bhagavad Gita is concerned, the Mahatmas are the pure devotees who are on the path to Vaikuntha, the kingdom of God, and who always chant and hear the glories of the Lord rather than talk of dry, profitless philosophy. This system of association has been recommended since time immemorial. But in this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, it is especially recommended by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Please listen to this last part. Even if one has no assets of favorable austerity, if he nevertheless takes shelter of the Mahatmas who are engaged in chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord, he is sure to make progress on the path back home, back to Godhead. So there are so many hints for us as Mahaprabhu was carrying Maharaj Pataparudra in this wonderful drama to his lotus feet and to ecstatic devotional service. So then, after reciting those verses, what does Ramananda Roy do? Who is present, first of all? Paramananda Puri, Brahmananda Bharati, Goswami, Sarup Damodar, Lord Nityananda, Jagannanda, Mukunda. Others, too, were present before the Lord at this time. And Sri Ramananda Roy, soon as Mahaprabhu said this, Mahaprabhu said that because he loves you, the king is going to get the favor of Krishna. And soon as Mahaprabhu says this, Ramananda Roy offered his obeisances to the Lord's devotees, in particular to the four spiritual masters. Thus Ramananda Roy suitably met all the devotees. This is the meeting process with the devotees. Please accept my humble obeisances. So then Mahaprabhu said to Ramananda Roy, have you already seen Lord Jagannath in the temple? Have you already visited the temple of lotus-eyed Lord Jagannath? And Ramananda said, I shall now go to the temple. Mahaprabhu answered, what have you done, my dear Rai? Why did you not first see Lord Jagannath and then come to see me? Why have you come here first? And Ramananda Roy replied, the legs are like the chariot, and the heart is like the driver of the chariot. Wherever the heart, the driver, takes the living entity is obliged to go. Now, Prabhupada's purport, because this is such a verse that describes spontaneous love, the platform of spontaneous love where the heart is dictating everything. And all one's movements, activities, are controlled by the heart that's filled with love. And Prabhupada's purport speaks about the same point in a subtle way, but seemingly from an almost opposite way. Please listen. It is short. The living entity is the charioteer. So who is the living entity in the metaphor? He's the soul, me. I am the charioteer, the driver of the vehicle. And of course, the body is the chariot offered by material nature. And the mind are the reins controlling the horses. And the senses are the horses. So a wonderful metaphor that we're familiar with. So how can this chariot, and this is the essential question, once we ascribe the real goal that we want to achieve, where we want to drive this chariot of the mind, of the body, of the mind, through the mind and the senses, where do we want to drive it? We should know that. We should become deeply, deeply convinced where we want to go with our life. Otherwise, we'll be going, I'd like to go to Govardhan right now and I take 5 steps, but maybe I should go to Jatipur first. Or no, actually, I want to go over there and this way 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 and this way. That's what I feel like when I'm chanting japa mostly every morning. 50 different directions all at once. The mind becomes full of desires, unlimited desires. Therefore, Mahaprabhu said, become very focused. Prabhupada continues here. One who is advanced in Krishna consciousness can control the mind and intelligence. In other words, he can control the reins and the horses, the senses. even though the horses are very powerful. One who can control the senses by his mind and intelligence can very easily approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or Vishnu, who is the ultimate goal of life. So it appears almost that our job is to exert our control over the mind and the senses and the body and everything by the power of my will. I must control it. I must fully control it by my willpower. But it isn't. It isn't. It isn't. The living entity, the person, can do this, but not by his will. But like Ramananda Roy is saying, because after all, this is a purport to this verse, an explanation. The heart of the living entity, my heart, has to become filled with this very focused desire. And then controlling the mind and the senses becomes easy for the advanced devotee, because he is focused on where he wants to go, and he doesn't want anything else. The heart must become a flame in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, the mind and the senses, the horses, will take us here and here and here and here, but in Kali Yuga, mostly downward. Because Kali presents so many alternatives. And although they are just the glitter of glass, Kali's expertise is presenting them as jewels. The advanced devotee can control the mind and intelligence. So when Prabhupada is talking about the advanced devotee, I tend to think that he is telling this to someone other than this person who he would like to become a suitable instrument in his service. Let it be done by someone else. I heard recently this one lecture of Prabhupada where he said, "Don't disappoint Krishna." It was so touching. Don't disappoint Krishna. Become focused. And let the heart become a flame. Not cheaply, because it won't work cheaply. But let the real thing happen. And the process is described here. Ramananda Roy continued, "What could I do? My mind has brought me here. I could not consider going first to Lord Jagannath's temple." Mahaprabhu advised, "Immediately go to Lord Jagannath's temple to see the Lord. Then go home and meet your family members." Having received Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's permission, Ramananda Roy hastily went to the temple of Lord Jagannath. Who can understand the devotional service of Rai Ramananda? Who can understand the devotional service of Rai Ramananda? One whose heart is attuned to the devotional service of Ramananda. Prem bhakti ritti bhuje konjane. What person can understand the consciousness that he was carrying, that as soon as Mahaprabhu saw him, he embraced him and began to cry in ecstasy? There is such a tendency for me, a conditioned soul, to think either, why does he like Ramananda Roy so much? I should be that one. wouldn't it be nice if Mahaprabhu, if he saw me, would embrace me like that? That's one step above, but far below. Wouldn't it be nice if when Mahaprabhu saw me, he would embrace me like that and cry in ecstasy? And the answer is, don't think like that. Just try to find someone who Mahaprabhu is favoring and serve that person. Don't try to push yourself forward. That's the tendency. That's the tendency always, to get closer and closer. I want to get 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 closer. I want to be the closest. Let me just either push, depending upon what gender of the body you happen to be. Let me just get closer and closer. Let me just either push Radharani a little bit to the side, or put Krishna a little to the side, and so I can just stand there. Hi, it's me. This is called envy, and this is why I'm here in the material world. Not to try to get closer, but to serve those who are closer. Gopi Bhakta Pada Kamalayo Dasa Dasana Dasa. Okay. According to my watch, I still have 7 minutes before 12 o'clock. And it's synchronized this time. So, are there any questions? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
You, bravo, well spoken.
Well read? Oh, don't bring that topic up. I spoke about sanskars. Yes, but let me quickly move to a better part of that one. Chitta, cheto, darpana, marjanam. That the chitta, the chetana, the consciousness can be cleansed. Cheto dharpana marjanam. It can be cleansed. It's part of the subtle body. It is not me. It is an artificial imposition on me. And it can be cleansed by chanting Krishna's holy name. And then bhavamaha devagnina vapanam. Then the forest fire of material existence is extinguished. And then Shreya Karayv Chandrika, the white lotus of my good fortune, can blossom. Which means my spiritual identity. Yes. What was your question? Chitta or Chaitana, according to the third canto of the Bhagavatam, it also is described in another way, that there is one substance with four attributes, and they're called one thing or another, depending upon how they are used, their use. So it's either ahankar or false ego, or buddhi, intelligence, or mana, or chitta, or consciousness, slightly contaminated consciousness. So it's really one substance, very often chitta is translated as heart, consciousness, mind, depending upon how it's used. So I'm so lucky, because however it is used, either as heart, mind, intelligence, or false ego, mine need to be cleaned. When I say need, by the way, what I really mean to say, if I was speaking more carefully, it is in our own self-interest, if we could focus and pierce through all the clouds of illusion. Yeah, well, is there anyone that you trust enough to place the desires of your mind before them and ask them to either concur, or, like Mahaprabhu said, that's what Mahaprabhu said, you can place any proposal before me, and if I think it's proper, I accept it, if not, I will reject it. So do you have anyone that you have that much trust in? So you're so lucky. You're so lucky. This is such great fortune to have trusted friends. And the older we get in our lives, the more we value trusted friends who we could open our hearts to the very core. Very lucky if we have one person like that in our whole life. What to speak of two or three? Yes, you have to speak quite loudly for... Don't... Yeah. Oh. I would love to play the segment of the tape. I'm showing my age there. Have you ever seen a tape recorder? Really? You're pretty old too. I remember when the first cassettes came out. That's old, yeah? Before that, when we were preaching in Ginza, the Ginza in Japan, we used to take this big tape recorder with us out every day and play big. But in any case, I wouldn't be able to do it justice at this point. But I think I've written down the reference. So if I can find it, I'll play it for you. It's quite short, but it's powerful. It changes. Our consciousness changes in when we're deciding what to do. If we think that there's another person who's going to be affected by what we do, and what Maya makes us do, especially when it fills us with the lower modes of nature and the qualities of lust, anger, and greed, is that our consciousness narrows. It's the exact opposite of sattvagun, of goodness. And all we see is what we want. This is lust, anger, greed, gambling, etc. Our consciousness narrows. It's the perversion of spiritual consciousness. It narrows on a materialistic motive. And we don't see anything but ourself at that time. So it changes when we see that Krishna can actually be hurt. He's a person. By what we do, what we say, how we think, whether we turn our back on him or turn towards him, it changes things. And therefore you brought up this very nice question. So I will try my best to find it, the reference. And now my time is over. And thank you very much. I spoke for so long and you have listened very attentively. And I deeply appreciate that. And also I heard my own words, which is the great benefit of speaking, or one of the great benefits of speaking. So thank you very much. Chilu Prabhupada ki jai. Giriraj Maharaj ki jai. Giriraj Vrindavan Gornitai Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Si si jai jai si Radhe Shyam.